Welcome to Season 2, Podcast 3 of the Summer Library Podcast. I'm Paul Sorrell, along with T.R. Parker. T.R., it is spring, but it feels like summer. What's going on with this weather,
yeah,
man?
Yeah, I'm not sure. It just went straight to summer. It was sort of a mild winter, and then now it's warm and in the 80s, but it is pretty out, and sometimes there's a nice breeze.
And we have Easter coming up. We're in Holy Week.
We have Easter. We are in Holy Week. We'll be closing at 5 p.m. on Maundy Thursday and closed through the weekend and back open on normal hours on Monday. So we hope you have a nice week.
A meaningful week.
A meaningful week, a reverent week, if you will, and then a joyous Easter.
Mm-hmm.
Just to rejoice in that occasion. So in the university setting, we, of course, are at a university, and we're actually making the transition to NCAA next year in our athletic program.
That's right. Lots of
exciting things going on at Union. But in the NCAA right now, it is March Madness in both men's and women's basketball.
Mm-hmm.
Any thoughts on that, Paul? Have you followed that?
I followed it some, and we've got Kansas and Kentucky going at it tonight, which we are recording this on the day of
the
championship game.
Sure. Who you got?
I don't care.
Yeah.
No, maybe. Okay.
I
do care. Kentucky, but with an asterisk.
Okay. What's the asterisk?
They've become one and done you,
right,
and I don't
right.
like that.
Sure, understood. I sort of feel the same way, but I have good friends who are actually on the faculty here who are big Kentucky fans, so we need to be careful with
that. Yes, our own Jenny Lowry.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. Yeah.
A huge Kentucky fan.
Yes, yes. Someone who we've interviewed on this podcast, Taylor Worley, is also a huge Kentucky fan. But we won't mention that they're an evil empire. So I filled out a bracket this year.
They are a Nike school.
And it was a disaster. My bracket was a disaster. I had Duke and North Carolina in the final.
Yeah.
And so we won't even talk about my basketball predictions.
No.
But anyway, we have a very exciting guest on the podcast today, the Charles Colson Professor of Faith and Culture at Union University, Dr. Harry Lee Poe, Hal Poe, as everyone so affectionately knows him, who has just published a work on one of his distant relatives, Edgar Allan Poe. The book is entitled Evermore: Edgar Allan Poe and the Mystery of the Universe. And we will be talking to him after this short break about his new publication and about Edgar Allan Poe. So come back to listen.
Who is the author of a new book, Evermore: Edgar Allan Poe and the Mystery of the Universe. Dr. Poe, thank you for coming.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
And thank you for being here.
And this new book is about something, a subject which you are very familiar, and someone whom you are related to. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I'm the president of the Edgar Allan Poe Museum in Richmond, Virginia, and I am the cousin of Edgar Allan Poe. He was my great-great-grandfather's cousin.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So how many cousins would that be to you?
Well, plenty.
Dr. Poe, I noticed just from reading a little bit about your bio that you did go to the University of South Carolina. That museum is in the state of South Carolina as well. Is that
No,
is
Richmond,
that right?
Virginia Richmond, is a Virginia. Different state.
Okay, mm-hmm. Right. Sorry about that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you did you kind of grow up knowing of your relation to Edgar Allan Poe and sort of kind of being aware of that?
Yes. My grandfather had some correspondence from Poe that had been passed through the family that he had to sell during the Depression, but we've always been aware of the family connection and passed that on to each successive generation.
And so is that how you sort of begin to develop an interest in him? Did you always have a literary interest and always an interest in him as you grew up, or was it later that you sort of decided?
It grew. I never thought I would be writing on Poe, but then I never thought I would be the president of the Poe Museum. In 1999, I organized the family reunion. We have one every 100 years. You don't want to do these things too often. But in 1999, I organized the Poe family reunion, and we sent a note to the Poe Museum just in case they were aware of any other relatives. And the executive director came to the reunion and invited me to Richmond that year to speak at the 150th anniversary of the death of Poe. And they then the next year invited me to join the Board of Trustees, and the year after that they asked me to be the president. So I've gradually gotten into it a little deeper. I accidentally began collecting Poe items, first editions and first printings, and before I knew it, I had a sizable collection. In 2009, which was the bicentennial of Poe's birth, I took the collection around to a number of libraries in the United States, but also to the Russian National Library in St. Petersburg, Russia. So it's been a gradually building thing. For the bicentennial, I also wrote a book on Poe for Barnes & Noble, which won the Edgar Award, which is presented by the Mystery Writers of America for the best biographical critical work on a mystery writer. And Poe was the one who actually invented the mystery story, which is one of the most popular kinds of stories we Americans love to hear. It occupies most of the television airwaves in the evening. So Poe's the one responsible for all of that.
So in collecting the sort of building your collection, did that come in conjunction with your involvement with the Poe Museum, like just building, you know, starting to collect manuscripts and the first editions and starting this Poe collection? Or was that just something that you had started doing through your study in college?
Well, it didn't really have anything to do with study, though I did get my first original Poe book when I was in college. I was in an American literature class with Joel Meyerson, who was in his first semester of teaching. Since then, he went on to be one of the most celebrated scholars of American literature of our age. He's just retired. But he would bring to class first editions of Emerson and the New England crowd. And I thought, wouldn't it be fun to find something like that related to Poe? And sure enough, that semester I found an 1843 edition of Graham's Magazine with Poe's poem, The Conqueror Worm, in it, and picked it up for a dollar, and that started me off.
Okay, so this was sort of just sort of a
it was a hobby.
Interest in a hobby,
yeah.
Right? That's exactly the word I was thinking of. So what did you study in college? Did you study literature?
I was an English major.
You were an English major. Mm-hmm. So this was an outpouring of that, some of that scholarly interest as a young person. And then I noticed that you went on to the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary after that.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, were you thinking of going into the ministry, or what drew
Yes,
you
I planned
direction?
To be a pastor, and that was my only interest. I just assumed I would always be a pastor in Greenville County, South Carolina. I've never made it there yet, but I've been a pastor and a prison chaplain, and I'd never planned to teach, and yet I was invited to join the faculty of Southern Seminary and taught there for a number of years. And when David Dockery, who was the vice president at Southern, became president of Union University, he asked me to come down to Union and help out. I was the associate vice president for academic programs at Southern Seminary at the time. So I've been here since 1996.
Okay. That's great. And we were just – Paul and I were just talking about what an impact you seem to be making on this. You weren't sort of one – you know, just really making an impact in so many ways here at Union. Now, your title is Charles Colson Professor of Faith and Culture, coming in with a theology background but having a literary interest and writing – you know, this book also seems to overlap with science, and maybe you can explain that to us a little bit more. But what exactly – does that look like at Union? What exactly do you teach, and how do you? Is it sort of an integrative, interdisciplinary approach that you have? Or?
Well, if somebody looks at my resume, mm-hmm. they'll scratch their head and say, right. "What in the world is going on here?" Because I seem spread very thin. I write in the area of science and religion. Mm-hmm. I write in the area of politics. I write in the area of literature and art. I write in the area of missions and history. And it seems that I'm just terribly thin, but if you look at what I'm actually writing, I really only write about one subject and focus on that rather intently. I'm interested in how the gospel intersects with culture. Mm. So I'm really only writing about the gospel. Mm-hmm. And that's what this book is about, really, the Evermore volume. Poe died in 1849. He's been an icon of culture ever since. I have no idea how many books have been written about Poe, how many articles have been written. By the mid-1800s, an English journal was saying, you can always get published if you write an article on Poe. And it's the same in 2009. I met a number of journalists who were doing articles about Poe for the Bicentennial. At the end of the Bicentennial, the Associated Press reporter came by the museum to do yet another story, and I always thank them because we're grateful for any attention that they give to Poe. And he just sort of, with a downcast look, said, "We don't have any choice. The public wants to know about Poe."
So, why do you think Poe has stayed in the public consciousness as long as he has, and is as intriguing as he is to people who want to know about him?
Well, it's an interesting thing. Poe has never been really accepted by the American literary establishment, which astonishes Europeans and Asians and South Americans, because to them, we only have two internationally known literary figures, Poe and Mark Twain. And that's really our literary output as far as the rest of the world is concerned. Mm-hmm. And Poe is the one who's had the most influence. You can think of the mystery story and the influence that he's had. Anyone who writes a mystery story is standing on Poe's shoulders. But the other – that's the first major kind of storytelling of the modern age. The second kind of storytelling of the modern age is science fiction. And
right.
Poe was the pioneer at science fiction. Jules Verne started writing science fiction after reading Poe's story, The Balloon Hoax. And so he wanted to write the same sort of story that Poe was writing. And he imitated a number of Poe's plots and developed them into full-length novels. He also influenced the poetry of Europe. The aim of Poe in writing was to create an effect in the listener.
Mm-hmm.
So you have some sort of impression you want to create. Well, the French took the term impression, and the Impressionist movement began around that, and Poe was the idol of the Impressionists, both the poets, the painters, and the musicians. So he had a huge impact in Europe. I'm interested in him from a theological perspective, and it was only when I began looking at his full body of work that I realized how profoundly important he is. Most people don't realize that Poe became a Christian about 6 weeks before he died.
Okay.
And that in most of the writing that he did, he was exploring some basic questions that many people deal with.
Mm-hmm.
And they seemed rather obvious to me, but this is only the second theological study that's been done of Poe in 160 years.
Mm-hmm.
The first one was done over 100 years ago by a professor at the University of Virginia who looked specifically at biblical allusions in Poe. And Poe quotes the Bible over 600 times.
Mm.
And the intriguing thing is he's not looking up passages. He's doing it from memory. And we know he was doing it from memory because when you look something up, you're unsure of it. And so when you look it up, you write it down accurately. When you're working from memory, that is, when you're so sure you know something, you don't bother to check the quotation, then you'll have a little word out of place. You might say the instead of a, or you might make a plural rather than a singular. And what the astonishing thing is Poe had a huge, huge command of the Bible.
Hmm. Now, where did that come from? Was that something that he learned as a child?
Yes. He went to church as a child. But when he went to university, he went to Mr. Jefferson's university, the University of Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
And Jefferson wanted to expunge religion from education. Mm-hmm. So there was no chapel mm-hmm. at the University of Virginia. It's the only school in the country at that point that did not have a chapel. And so Poe became exposed to the new thinking. And Jefferson also took scissors to his Bible and cut out any reference to the miraculous.
Right.
So he entered that stage. If you want a modern parallel to his conversion, you would look at C.S. Lewis.
Mm-hmm.
They had virtually the same issues, and they were dealing with them at the same point of life. The difference between Poe and Lewis is that Lewis became a Christian 30 years before he died, and Poe became a Christian 6 weeks before he died mm-hmm. and never wrote a sentence as a Christian.
Right.
But the questions are there. And the first big question has to do with the problem of suffering and pain.
Mm-hmm.
And most people ask that question.
Sure.
Why did it's we generalize it. Why is there suffering in the world? What we really mean is, why did my mother die?
Mm-hmm.
Why did my friend get killed in an automobile accident?
Right.
Why is my sister paraplegic?
Mm-hmm.
And it's very personal,
mm-hmm.
and we experience it in life. Poe's parents both died when he was a little bitty boy. And most of the people he loved died of some long, drawn-out illness.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a question he asked. Most people leave it there and just mm-hmm. deal with that question. But Poe noticed there were some other questions on the other side. For instance, the problem of beauty.
Mm-hmm.
In just a plain old universe of material where there's nothing else, where there's no ultimate, we'll say. We're not even talking about God yet, just
right.
something other than material. Beauty doesn't seem to fit. Why would you have beauty? Because that's a value. That's an experience that goes beyond just the physical.
Mm-hmm.
Second question he was asking was, why is there love? Because though he'd experienced plenty of pain, he really experienced more love
mm-hmm.
than most people do. And that's a problem in this universe as well. If it's just a dog-eat-dog world,
right.
where does love come from? The fourth big question he was asking deals with the problem of justice.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you can see it with the mystery story, because this is what he was dealing with when he invented the mystery story. And the funny thing about the mystery story is it only works if the audience brings to the story the idea of justice.
Mm.
That is, the audience wants to know who done it.
Mm-hmm.
The audience wants the innocent person to be set free. They want the guilty person to be punished. And here's the thing. It's not that the kind of justice where I want what's coming to me.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that would be the sort of thing you'd find in just a brute universe. For the mystery story to work, the audience has to care about somebody they don't even know.
Mm.
And that's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
It's a huge problem. And so Poe looked at the idea of justice in all sorts of different ways, but the mystery story was one of those. Finally, he was asking the question, why is there something rather than nothing?
Mm-hmm.
Why is there a universe at all?
Right.
And up until then, we'll use the year 1847. In 1847, the physics of the day, the astronomy of the day, the best science of the day said that universe has always existed and it is infinite in size. There are an infinite number of stars. That was in the science textbook I used in the seventh grade.
Mm-hmm.
That was the science even of Einstein. Einstein believed that the universe had always existed. And why did they believe this? Because Aristotle said so.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there you have it. That settles it.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a problem scientists had. It was called Olber's paradox. And Olber's paradox, simply stated, is why is the night sky dark?
Mm.
Here's the problem. If you have an infinite number of stars, that means every space in the night sky should be filled with a point of light, so that instead of a dark sky punctuated by the odd little pinprick of light, what you ought to see is a dull, luminous glow across the entire heavens. Instead, what you see is the same sort of effect you get if you shoot birdshot from a shotgun at the side of a barn. As the shot leaves the barrel, it begins to spread apart in a general distribution. And Poe argued that the night sky is not luminescent. The night sky is dark because there is not an infinite number of stars. That the stars that are there spread out from a common point, which means they had a beginning, and something caused them to expand outward. And Poe said this something is a someone. There is a God who created the universe. Well, they said it was crazy, absolutely crazy. And literary critics continue to consider Poe's essay on this subject, published in 1848 as Eureka.
Right.
The work of a man who's mentally unstable, when in fact it is the work of an incredible genius who has an insight that modern science did not catch up to until the 1970s.
And a lot of your book is based on Eureka, or your fascination with Eureka?
Well, that's the conclusion. It's what Poe was working towards. And in this book, Eureka, he quotes himself from the previous 20 years. That is, he quotes essays he had written much earlier as he was thinking about these things. And in Eureka, all these things come together. Beauty, justice, love, the creation of the universe, and the problem of pain. They all finally come together. And in resolving the problem of pain, he's thinking of the universe as a creative work by God. And he says, the universe is the perfect plot. See, every story has a plot. He says, the universe is the perfect plot. The universe is the plot of God. And in a story, you reach the crisis and then the resolution. And he says, we're still in the midst of the story. We still have the pain and suffering because the story isn't finished yet. And in the last few paragraphs, he began to speculate on what might the ending be. And there it's God bringing all things together. Now, it doesn't end as a Christian understanding of the end. He's got a Christian understanding of the beginning, but not a Christian understanding of the end. In 1848, when he published it, he wasn't a Christian yet.
And he only had about a year left.
So he was thinking about all of these things in 1847 when his wife died. In 1848.
How long were they married?
They were married about 10 years, 11 years.
And how did that affect him?
Well, he was desperately in love. I mean, it was one of those if you want the best picture of Poe, you don't want to read any of the biographies except the one by Arthur Hobson Quinn, because most of the stories perpetuate the slanders and the libels of Poe's literary enemy, Rufus Griswold, who was very jealous of Poe, but Poe made one big mistake. He died before Griswold. Griswold wrote his obituary, and then he wrote the biography of Poe that was used throughout the 19th century by everybody as the standard work on Poe. But if you want a good picture of Poe, go to Charles Dickens' novel, David Copperfield. Dickens was a friend of Poe. And a lot of people think that have just assumed that David Copperfield is a biographical work of Dickens. But it really doesn't have anything in common with Dickens, except little David worked in a bootblack factory for a little while.
Okay.
The rest of the story, almost point for point, is the biography of Poe. Now, mm-hmm. you ask about his marriage. His wife was his first cousin,
mm-hmm.
and she was considerably younger than he was. And you go to David Copperfield, and you find David Copperfield marries a young bride who's not really able to manage the household. And yet you have this deep, deep affection. David Copperfield was called Doty by his wife. Well, Edgar Allan Poe was called Eddie.
Mm.
And they talked baby talk to each other. And there are a lot of people who visited in the home. She was a striking beauty, vivacious, musically talented. She played the piano, the harp, and she sang. Poe sang with her. They did duets. He played the flute while she played the harp. And it was at a party in 1842. She was singing. She had a high note, and blood came gushing from her mouth.
Mm.
She had tuberculosis. She'd burst a blood vessel. And Poe had to watch her die slowly for 5 years.
Mm.
She died between 1842 and 1847, and it wrecked him. The most famous artifact of that period is his poem, The Raven.
Mm-hmm.
And The Raven is a poem of anticipatory grief in which he is awaiting the inevitable death of this beautiful, beautiful, lovely girl that meant everything to him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, was a theme in his writings bringing those who had died back to life or trying to connect with them on some other plane?
No, he was disgusted by that sort of idea. No, the theme would have been reunion after death.
Okay.
Going to heaven when you die,
okay.
Meeting those you love, being with those you love after death.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned David Copperfield, and I actually have seen some of those mentions throughout the book and through some other things that I've read. How did the relationship with Dickens come about between Poe and Dickens?
Dickens came to the United States in 1842 to make his grand tour, to give lectures, to promote his work. Poe had actually been one of the first literary critics to draw attention to Dickens and to promote him as really the great light that was coming out of Britain. And Poe was very well known as a literary critic before he was known as a writer of tales and poetry. And so when Dickens came, he met with Poe in Philadelphia. He was just there 2 days, so he met with Poe on both days. They were interested in many similar issues. One was the establishment of an international copyright, and so they collaborated on that and were eventually successful. But Dickens said in a letter once that there was only one person he had ever helped to get published. As a rule, he did not get involved in other people's literary efforts, but he said the one person I ever wanted to help get published was Edgar Allan Poe.
Mm-hmm.
Years after Poe died, his stepmother, not his stepmother, his mother-in-law, Maria Clemm, who was also his aunt, was still living. She lived to an old age, but in destitute poverty because Rufus Griswold, the villain of the story, managed to get control of the literary rights to Poe's estate. He promised Mrs. Clemm he would arrange everything for her if she would just sign this paper.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she signed over the copyright to Poe's works and never got a penny for it. But so she was destitute, and Dickens visited her on his last grand tour of the United States and brought to her a gift of a bag of gold. And
wow.
So this is testimony to Dickens' view of Poe and
mm-hmm.
his interest in Poe. David Copperfield was published in installments in 1849,
mm-hmm.
which was the year Poe died.
Mm-hmm.
And the end of Poe's life, as you remember in David Copperfield, after Copperfield's beautiful child bride died, he hit the skids, was mm-hmm. deeply depressed. Poe went the same sort of thing.
Right.
And this is the period from which we think of Poe as the hopeless alcoholic, very depressed. But then he came to his senses, went back home, became engaged to his childhood sweetheart, and they married and lived happily ever after. This is, in fact, what happened with Poe. He went back to Richmond, and there his childhood sweetheart was now a widow. Hmm. They fell in love a second time and became engaged. And Poe was on his trip to New York to bring Mrs. Clem back to Richmond for the wedding when he died.
Hmm. Wow.
Hmm. Wow.
So in writing Eureka, he was putting all his thoughts that he had. And he really thought, I believe he said that this was more important than gravity. I think I read that.
Yes.
So, and of course, at the time, people didn't understand what he was maybe trying to get across.
Yes, his science is so far ahead of the time.
Right.
Because, remember, this is before Einstein's theory of relativity.
Mm-hmm.
But in Eureka, Poe is talking about the relativity of time and space.
Being one, right?
Being one, of mm-hmm. time and space being one reality. And, of course, that seemed crazy mm-hmm. in 1848.
Mm-hmm.
He talked about the continuity of electromagnetism and light.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's just standard physics today. But mm-hmm. it was crazy
right.
back then. And then the idea of an expanding universe. In 1848, they knew of two of the four fundamental forces. They knew of gravity. And they knew of electromagnetism. They did not know about the strong nuclear force and the weak nuclear force. In Eureka, Poe assumes there are other forces in operation that we do not yet know or understand. So he speaks of those forces as attraction and repulsion.
Hmm.
And so we know that these are the forces that are at work in holding an atom together.
Mm-hmm.
You've got your proton and your neutron and your right. electron, and you've got attraction and repulsion.
Mm-hmm.
So he was thinking his way logically mm-hmm. through all of this in the absence of any empirical data, because the scientific equipment necessary to make those observations would not be invented for decades and decades and decades.
If he had lived longer than his 40 years, where do you think he would have wound up as far as his writings, his Christian beliefs that he obviously had been pondering for years but just made the commitment, you know, not too far mm-hmm. from his death, his scientific thinkings?
Oh, I don't think we can do – I don't even think we can speculate on that. I mean,
yeah.
You just never know what might have been.
Right.
People talk about the tragedy of Poe, but, you know, lived to be 40 years old in that day and age when people were dropping dead, you know, quite early, and mm-hmm. when infant mortality was such that one of every two children would die mm-hmm. in childhood. And everybody died at home. Death was just a common thing. So the fact that he died at 40 is not really tragic.
Mm-hmm.
And we think, oh, what might have been, but look what was.
Right.
So Poe had what really mattered to him. He had love, and he had an opportunity to use his gifts mm-hmm. to the best he could, and he did, in spite of what it cost him. He was one of the first people in history to try to earn a living as a literary mm-hmm. person through their own writings. So I don't really see Poe as a tragic figure.
Well, and didn't he comment after he wrote Eureka to someone that was – you know, he could go.
Yes. Mm-hmm. He's now done his yeah. most important work.
Right.
It's okay to die now. He's done the big thing.
And ironically, a year later, he was gone.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, we appreciate your time. And just a little more about the book, I'm sure it's available at Amazon.com.
Yes.
And where else can others purchase your
book? Well, if they don't have it at your local bookstore, tell them to get it. It's from Baylor University Press.
Okay. And we have a copy in the library.
We do. And now, Dr. Poe, you've got your book there, and you've got some other things as well. What did you bring with us? We can show everybody on the radio.
Well, I'll hold up this book so you can see the cover.
They are impressive. Lots of illustrations. And
well, the Barnes & Noble book, Edgar Allan Poe, An Illustrated Companion to His Telltale Stories, was a 2009 book. That's the one that won the Edgar Award.
Okay.
And
it's a very attractive
book. It was a fun book. It's a popular light book. Mm-hmm. This one goes into much more detail, the Evermore book does.
Sure.
And you said in about the Evermore book that it didn't take you long to write, but it took you a while to compile all these things. The writing process, about how long had you worked on it from the initial conception to getting it published?
At one level, I'd been dealing with it for probably 12 years because working on science and religion, I came across Poe's Eureka. I didn't come across it in literary circles. Most literary people, even most Poe scholars, really don't know much about Eureka. It's mm-hmm. it's just outside of their frame of reference. But in the 1990s, a number of physicists began to discover Eureka mm-hmm. and were astonished at what they found in Eureka. So I think the scientific community has probably been much more interested in Eureka than the literary community because mm-hmm. They had no preconceived notions about Poe. And they opened it up, and they found these incredible insights into our universe and are baffled at how in the world could a French major mm-hmm. have reached all of these conclusions when he did.
Right. It is impressive. Mm-hmm. So do you have any more books on the horizon?
Well, there'll always be another one.
Anything you're working on currently?
I'm doing some things related to C.S. Lewis and some things related to the gospel.
And really quickly on the note of C.S. Lewis, if I recall, you've done some work on the Inklings as a whole, and there's a web page that you've developed or set up regarding your work on the Inklings. Is that something you've done before?
I know. No, I'm part of an organization called the Inklings Fellowship.
Yes, that's it.
That is interested in encouraging young people in higher education to pursue their vocation, their calling, in light of their faith. And we have retreats and conferences for them during the year. And that's inklingsfellowship.org.
Right. That's what I was thinking of. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you for sharing. And thank you so much for being here.
Yes.
Well, thank you.
We appreciate your time.
Me.
Happy Easter coming up later.
For sure.
In a few days. And we just wish you all the best with the book. And I guess you can breathe a sigh of relief a little bit after a book has been published and all the mm-hmm. hard work has been done. And you can enjoy the fruits of your labor until it's time to research and go at it again.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thanks a lot for coming. And it's an interesting read. I started it the other day, and it's fascinating. And just the intersection of science and faith. And I think a lot of listeners who may be listening to our podcast will find it very, very fascinating, very interesting.
Yeah, I love how you've organized it according to the way you just outlined it, based on the questions, the problem of suffering, the problem of beauty, the problem of love, justice, right. The universe. It's a it's a nice organization that sort of captures you.
Yeah,
from
a lot of questions we all have.
Yes, mm-hmm. for sure. Yeah, universal questions.
Well, we have been speaking with Dr. Hal Poe, the Charles Colson Professor of Faith and Culture here at Union, and we just want to thank him once again for joining us today, and maybe we can have you back. You're very fascinating to listen to, and maybe we'll pick your brain about something else.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you, Dr. Poe.
Okay, and we'll be back right after this. discuss Edgar Allan Poe, a distant cousin of his, and his new book, Edgar Allan Poe and the Mystery of the Universe. A quite fascinating talk with Dr. Poe.
Yeah, quite fascinating. And on the back here, there's an interesting little subtitle, I guess, or it's a sub-subtitle, but Revisiting the Dark Myth of the American Literary Icon. So Dr. Poe, just really interesting to listen to just mm-hmm. now. We are so thankful for him taking time out at this busy time of year to just talk with us on the library podcast. You can get Evermore. It's on the new bookshelf in the library. It's in my hand right now, but I'm about to go put it back on the new bookshelf. And you can check it out from the library or buy your own copy on Amazon or probably in the Union bookstore as well. So Thanks for listening today, everybody.
Yes, and we just want to thank everyone for listening, and we want to wish everyone a happy Easter and a good rest of the semester, because by the time we come back, there's just a few more weeks than exams and summer term.
Right.
So it goes by quickly.
Yep. We will talk to you soon, though. Have a great Easter. Happy Easter.
And don't forget, the Summer Library.
Where studying every day
could help you perform better academically. See ya. Get a fire in the moon. Get a fire in the moon.